Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. We got a lot to get to. Danny Cannell, rebel rouser, college football analyst for CBS Sports Network, will join us upcoming in 15 minutes. We will make him say on air that the SEC is not overrated. It is, in fact, underrated. And then we will run it in a loop for him later on in the interview. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst, is going to join us, and we'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and if or how someone could manage to slow down the high-powered scoring attack of the Pat Mahomes-led Chiefs. Bud Black is going to join us. He's a manager of the Colorado Rockies. It was looking like Rocktober until they walked into Chavez Ravine and caught a whooping last night. Now they're looking up at the Dodgers in the NL West, and they're looking up at the Brewers and the Cardinals in the wild card. So, Bud Black, we're getting down to, what's the term, nut-cutting time in baseball. Bud Black will join us. Man, there's a lot to get to. Woo, metric ton. Let's start with last night, shall we? The Chicago Bears won, and because they had six sacks, because there was a strip sack by Khalil Mack, everyone's going to sit there and go, what a genius trade. What a genius trade by the Bears front office. Ryan Pace did a great job of remaking this team. Of course, Ryan Pace is gambling on Mitch Trubisky, Mitchell, whatever, up and down, although he did the best thing you can do to a young quarterback, and that's bring in a young quarterback guru, somebody who saw Alex Smith have his best career as a pro going back to last year. And a lot of the looks in which you saw from the Chicago Bears last night had a kind of high school or college feel to it, to where you're not sitting there at the line of scrimmage and saying, all right, big Mitchell Trubisky, you win us a game. Just don't lose us a game. Which brings us to Russell Wilson. I think we would all agree that Russell Wilson was on an upward trajectory that put him in the conversation of the Bradys, the Breezes, the Mannings, maybe even the Rodgers. I will grant you that he's not given that amount of respect from many in the media and many in the NFL. There's just a lot of people who see Russell Wilson play, look at the numbers, the raw data, maybe even before last year, and go, you know, he's good, but he's not those guys. And they're right. But he was on an upward trajectory that put him in that conversation. And that upward trajectory seems to have stalled out. He was under duress, but he also got strip sacked. He also threw a pick six. He did as much to damage his cause. Their offense lacks some of the ingenuity you see in places like Chicago, places like Kansas City. Even if you have that sort of pass rush, there are ways other than just screen passes to nullify and to navigate that sort of defensive pass rush. But the biggest challenge to Russell Wilson in the future, if he wants to be viewed on that higher plane, is he's going to have to be Tom Brady if he wants to be Tom Brady. What does that mean? See, here's the thing with Russell Wilson. It's the same with Dak Prescott. Is they go from being underrated and undervalued and underpaid to being overvalued and overrated and overpaid. Russell Wilson's first contract could not be renegotiated until the end of his third year, much like Dak Prescott's, at which time he got paid. And when he got paid, some of the defensive players had to go. The offensive line has never been up to snuff. in sports and in life, kind of the challenge to an NFL quarterback is a microcosm of the challenge of sports and life. Something has to give. Sacrifice has to be made. Has to be made. And for the Seahawks to rightfully and smartly rebuild a team around him, don't get me wrong, Doug Baldwin's knee issues in the preseason and then his additional knee injury in the first week of the season, that's problematic. Chris Carson, who was hurt last year, hurt much of his college career. I don't know if you saw this. Chris Carson was just out of gas. That's why he didn't play late in the game. Like, Chris Carson's conditioning, that's got to be better. But more than anything, while it's not his job to get personnel around him to fix the offensive line, it is his job at some point to sacrifice something monetarily. Like, there's a reason that the Patriots are able to get away with bringing in guy after guy, with taking a guy off the waiver wire, with trading for other contracts, with making moves and learning what their team has in season that others are not. And a big reason why is the cap flexibility that Tom Brady allows them to have. Like, look, the challenge is pretty simple. Russell Wilson can be paid whatever sum of money you can pay a quarterback. He is worth that much to that franchise. I don't think he's Rodgers. I don't think he's Brady. I think there are many parts to him that I like better than Breeze. Some parts I don't like better than Breeze. He's clearly more athletic. I think he's got a much stronger arm. But he's also little. And he's one of those guys that, his style is different. What Breeze will do is Breeze steps up in the pocket and then he's constantly looking up, whereas if you've seen Russell Wilson, he's incredible at throwing on the move and setting his feet and his shoulders, but he also, when he drops back, he takes huge, huge drops. I mean, the deepest drops in the league, which when you get sacked, puts you way behind the chains. He's somewhere between the fifth best quarterback in the league and the 10th best quarterback in the league, right? And those guys are really hard to find. And I'd probably rather have him than Matt Stafford, who's bigger and might have more arm talent, but I do think that Russell Wilson has a bigger winning quotient, even if that's hard to measure with most modern stats. But I'll tell you this. Everyone says, I talk about this with my children. Everyone says, I want to be great at something. Then every kid I know has announced, if you listen to Doug Gottlieb, the All Ball podcast, Scott Brooks was my guest this week. Scott Brooks announced to his mom when he was 8 years old that he was going to play in the NBA. But that announcement has to be met with some sort of sacrifice, right? Every kid announces at some point what they're going to do when they grow up. Matter of fact, I do think that one of the reasons parents and adults often ask their kids what they want to be when they grow up is they're looking for ideas. Man, I don't like my job. Hey, Jimmy, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a firefighter. Nah, too hard. What else? I want to be a banker. You know, that's not a bad idea. Bankers do make a good amount of money. But the point is that every one of these dream goals take an amount of sacrifice. You know, from socializing with your friends to playing other sports once you get to high school and many times in your youth to being coached hard, to being pushed to keep your body in great physical condition, getting to bed early, eating right. All of these things are in fact sacrifices. And Russell Wilson and so many, and all these NFL players have made a personal sacrifice just to make it in the National Football League. And then they sacrifice their body, knowing their future, maybe that of a guy that can't find his car keys because they played football. But the monetary sacrifice made by Tom Brady has allowed the Patriots to constantly rebuild that offensive line, to try putting new pieces in place, and to keeping his team successful. And the way in which the Seahawks were originally built is the way in which they're building this defense. I don't know if you're watching, but that defense, some of those new pieces, pretty damn good. Like, John Snyder seems to know what he's doing in evaluating players. But if Russell Wilson wants to be back on that track to being viewed as one of the great quarterbacks in the league, instead of one of the really talented, boy, he used to be successful, but they can't protect him, and he doesn't seem to have the ability to find guys because maybe they're not open, or maybe his feet aren't set, or whatever. He wants to be back on that track. I think there's going to have to be a financial sacrifice in his next deal. Just because you can doesn't mean you should take more. What's that to Chris Rock says? You can drive a car with your feet. That doesn't make it a good idea. He can make more than Aaron Rodgers. That's, you know, next guy always makes more. But should he? The answer is clearly no if he wants to have Seattle build a team around him.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in Danny Cannell, of course, covers college football for CBS Sports Network. Played at Florida State, played in the NFL. Before we move on to talking college football, you also host your own daily podcast, and I want to get your take on what we saw from the Bears and the Seahawks. I do think that in addition to some added creativity for their offense with Seattle, at some point Russell Wilson's going to have to think about taking a little bit less so they spread some money around that offensive line and get him some more pieces to work with. That's not crazy talk, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think if he's smart, he will, Doug. I mean, that's what you've seen Tom Brady do later in his career the last 10 years. He's never been the highest paid quarterback. And if Russell Wilson wants to survive the season, they're going to have to invest the money in the boys up front because that offensive line is about as bad as it gets. Back-to-back weeks, six sacks. And Russell Wilson is a top five quarterback. He is in that category of a guy who can carry a team on his back. But even in saying that, he can only do so much by himself. They've got to give him some help or else this team, which has done it before, they've come back from an 0-2 start to make a push for the playoffs. They're going to be in for a long year if they don't get him some help.
You know, it's interesting. I know you know Brock Huard really well. You guys both obviously played in the league, and you know he points out, look, against that type of pressure, read option, sprint right option, speed option, tight end screen, gap screen, slot screen, bubble screen, running back screen, draw, sprint draw, play action, off draw, no huddle, muddle huddle, quick break huddle, many ways to use Brayer's aggressiveness against them. Seen none of this. Why the lack of creativity from Seattle offensively?
Well, that's a great question. I think they've gotten a little bit lazy relying on Russell Wilson too much. And if you watch the Packers, if you've heard any of Aaron Rodgers' frustrations in the past with the Green Bay Packers, the same thing, and I think that's why he gets frustrated with Mike McCarthy and has over the last 5 or 6 years, I think sometimes coordinators get complacent. And they say, hey, well, I can call up these plays, and if it's not there, if he gets pressure, he can escape because Russell Wilson is so mobile. But they have to do something to neutralize those pass rushes. And especially when you've got Khalil Mack just teeing off on you and every other person out there, the best defense to that, it's kind of like judo, right? I'm not even a big judo guy.
Right.
But you use your opponent's strength to their disadvantage. So let them come after you, do some misdirection, flip a screen right over the top of them there. They almost think they're going to get a sack. And you get a receiver coming across the middle or slip a running back through there. And then it'll at least temper them a little bit where they can't just pin their ears back because what you saw last night was just free reign on Russell Wilson, and they can't have that.
Yeah, Danny Cannell joining us, CBS Sports Network college football analyst, also on CBSSports.com. He has a daily show along with Rajah Bell. It's a really, really good one. You can download the podcast wherever your podcasts are available. Okay, let me get to college football. What are we doing at Florida State? Like, what's going on? I mean,
it's rough. So, Doug, I know you care about Oklahoma State. I care about Florida State.
Right.
It is bad. It is a rough start for the program. So bad that I took to Twitter and put out an emergency video.
I saw that. To plead with
Florida State fans not to jump off the ship just yet. Like, relax. It's three games. I think there's some things you have to remember for Florida State. If you're a Florida State fan or you're just a college football fan, this team is not very good. I know they were ranked in the preseason, you know, because there was some excitement, new coaching staff, you had a pretty strong recruiting class, But this offense, which has struggled, was ranked 100th in the country last season. They were ranked 99th in protecting the quarterback last season.
Yeah, but hold on. They didn't have DeAndre Francois, right? You lose your quarterback who's – but it's not – listen, you're not wrong for anything you're saying. It's not that they're getting beaten. It's not – but one, they got housed by Syracuse, and they just don't look well coached. And
they don't at this point. But here's the problem, Doug. Here's what they're dealing. And if you really dive into their offensive line, and really I do look at it as one position problem. Now, this is what we were just talking about, what Seattle has to do to call different plays. That's what I want to see from Florida State, because this offensive line, you can't go sign a free agent off the street. You can, you know, if Seattle can go find somebody, they would. Florida State doesn't have that option. They've been decimated by injuries. Their center's out. They've got a couple guards that they're trying to convert into tackles. That's how desperate they are. But I would say there was a little bit of cause for concern because of the effort issue late. There were guys flat out whiffing on from the tackle position, and defensive ends were just running right by them, teeing off on DeAndre Francois. I think it's going to be a long year. That was one of the reasons I went and took to the video to say, look, let's not bail on the team because it's bad. If you think it's bad now, give it a few weeks. Like, this is a rebuild year, and I know it's something that Florida State fans don't want to hear. But go look at the other programs. Look at what's happened in your backyard out there on the West Coast with Chip Kelly, a proven commodity who knows how to coach. They have had a disastrous start. Look at Scott Frost at Nebraska. You know, the homecoming. He's coming back to lead his team back to prominence. It has been a rough start. When you hire a new coach, it is like starting from scratch, especially in today's college football landscape. So I would say, it is a rebuild year. Take it, temper your expectations, and support the team, because all these fans that go out there, and it happens everywhere, they start GoFundMe pages, they fly a banner over the program, you know, over the stadium that says Fire Taggart or whatever it's going to say. It's ridiculous to do it at this point, and it doesn't do anybody any good.
Are you convinced he knows what he's doing?
I am. I'm convinced he has a plan, a long-term plan. The emergency of in-game adjustments, I'm a little bit concerned about, but I think he can adjust to that, and he has to, because if he doesn't, if he still tries to call the same plays he's been running the first 3 weeks at Tallahassee, DeAndre Francois is not going to last till the second quarter in their next game against Northern Illinois, let alone when they play the majority of their ACC schedule. He needs to make some adjustments in-game to protect the deficiencies across the offensive line, and if he doesn't, it could get really ugly. But I think he's smart enough to know that. I mean, every good coach would have to look at film and say, all right, this is not working. We need to make some adjustments. And that's what you have to trust that Willie Taggart will do. And I do have confidence that he will do that.
All right, what do you do? You spoke about UCLA.
Yeah.
Danny Cannell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. If you thought what what's his name? Bell.
LeVar Ball.
You thought LeVar Ball was bad. I would say this is way worse. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, highly touted recruit from Las Vegas, freshman who's gotten a chance to start because the veteran, the kid, Wilton Spade, who came in from Michigan, got hurt first game of the season. So they're 0-3. They lost at home twice. And here's what Dorian Thompson-Robinson's dad tweeted out. Million-dollar coach who bears no responsibility. He says he is speaking on and about the factual. It's all about coaching, lousy coaching and play calling, coaching that is so bad it demands closed practices, million-dollar coach who bears no responsibility, just random observations from a frustrated dad. What do you do if you're Chip Kelly and this is what the dad of your freshman starting quarterback tweets out?
This is an unfortunate circumstance that is totally a 2018 circumstance. And I do think it is LeVar Ball effect. Like, parents are out there, you know, especially overbearing parent, moms, dads, they are out there and they are voicing their displeasure and they have a platform to do it that is Twitter or is Facebook. And I think it is disgusting. I really do. I cannot stand the fact. And maybe even if he has some points to make, maybe if there's some of them are valid, which some of them are. It has been a rough start. It is not your place to go out there and say those things and put your son in a really bad spot. It's not even so much about being critical of Chip Kelly, but think about what it does to Dorian Thompson-Robinson now. Now he's got to go every day to practice and look Chip Kelly in the eye, knowing that Chip Kelly's probably pretty ticked off about something his dad said. Like, that's what bothers me in all these. LeVar Ball, all these overbearing parents, do they ever think about the impact of the things they say that they have on their child? Like, and they want what's best for their child. It doesn't make any sense for me whatsoever. The thing about LeVar Ball, where I think you're right, because this is worse, LeVar Ball, at least he was a one and done. At least he was a guy that had that potential. Dorian Thompson-Robinson may be a good quarterback, but he's not the next Baker Mayfield. At least not yet he is. He's not a first-round pick in the NFL draft. So let's just cool it a little bit. And it has been ugly. You know, an 0-3 start for Chip Kelly, nobody would have saw that coming. But again, does it do anybody any good after three games to take to Twitter and start voicing your displeasure? It only makes it harder on your son. I can't believe what we are doing with some of these parents. Like, they don't get it, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, you know what? They might get it if you can't cut kids, by the way, right? Now these scholarships are guaranteed, whereas you do this to the wrong coach, and I'm like, look, I wouldn't play him. I wouldn't play him. What are you going to lose? You're already losing. Like, you have to at some point make it a point to which, like, hey, you're going to hurt your son. You're already hurting him in our eyes. You're drawing a divide. And look, my dad was a former head coach in college, and he would occasionally just voice his displeasure. Now, he'd do it in person with the coaches or to me, but it was on. I can't imagine he would ever do it on Twitter. But he's on Twitter like that. That would, in fact, hurt me. Danny Cannell joining us, football analyst for CBS Sports. Check out his podcast, Off the Bench with Rajah Bell, which you can watch on CBS Sports HQ every day live at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay, here's what I need you to say. The SEC is the best conference in college football, and it's not close.
The SEC West is the best division in college football, and they're slightly better than the Big Ten East. How is that? No, they have. They've lived up to the expectations. They have. And here's the thing I will say, because I get a lot of heat for taking, you know, say I'm an SEC hater.
Yeah.
I just don't like the advantage they get when it comes to the playoff selection time. And then when I say that, like, Bama doesn't even win their division and they get gifted an opportunity. This is outstanding competition within this conference. And now you're seeing all of a sudden LSU looks like they're going to be better. Jimbo Fisher looks like he's got Texas A&M headed in the right direction. Like, it is a tough conference. It's a tough division to win in when you're in that SEC West. The thing I look in the SEC East, though, is if you want to be considered top to bottom the best conference in college football, you've got to be better on both sides. You can't be one-dimensional and really have Georgia and everybody else. And when I look at the SEC, yes, they are probably a little bit deeper than everybody else, but really it's the same story every single year in college football. There's two, maybe three teams in each conference that can win a national championship, and then there's a bunch of kind of average teams, and then there's a couple bad teams. And it's no different this year than every other year. The thing that's alarming to me, Doug, for college football, is that we're starting to see this divide of the haves and the have-nots.
Sure.
And the group of haves is getting pretty small, and it looks like the gap between them and everybody else is really starting to widen. And I wonder how college football fans around the country feel when every single time the playoffs, you're going to see Bama, you're going to see Clemson, you're going to see Ohio State, might be see Georgia. And then there's like a third, fourth, or fifth team, Oklahoma. They could have a good run, a Stanford potentially, LSU. There are some other teams that can make a run, but legitimately, they probably don't have a chance to win. I wonder what impact that has on the greater landscape of college football. That's my curiosity. I generally don't know the answer. But I do think you need to see some other teams start contending, or else it is going to get old to watch the same players at the table every single time.
Oh, I don't think that's – here's what I think has changed. You tell me if I'm crazy. Danny Cannell joining us. It's not just that Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State have a better depth of overall athletes. Now all three have legit quarterbacks, something you could not, especially at a place – you know, Ohio State, JT Barrett couldn't throw the ball downfield the last 3 years. They were better when he got hurt in the playoff, obviously. And, you know, Alabama has done it with good, solid quarterbacks, but a wide variety of them. Now with Tua, you have a legit quarterback who can throw, decipher defense, and make plays with his feet. So, you know, in the past, you've had, you know, the Baker Mayfields lifting up a team like an Oklahoma that is slightly a notch below the maybe Ohio State and the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Clemson in terms of NFL caliber athletic talent. But now you have those type of quarterbacks on the three of the biggest programs. And that's why I think there's a bigger divide this year than there has been in the past. Is that fair?
100%. You're right on. Because Alabama, really, Nick Saban has been the only coach to be able to win with just a game manager, a quarterback, because that's what he's won with. Now he's got a difference maker at that position. That's why Alabama looks unstoppable. And they might be a two-touchdown favorite the rest of the season. You know, when they go to Baton Rouge, it might be down to 10. But still, I mean, they're going to put up 50 points a game, and good luck stopping them, because they used to be, you could, you know, if you could shut down the run and put the burden on the quarterback, you could maybe have him make a mistake and get a couple sacks, maybe a fumble. But now that defenses have to respect the pass game, it's scary good. Now you've got Georgia, who even Georgia, who last year had Jake Fromm, you know, who was a good true freshman quarterback. Now he's got another guy, Justin Fields, breathing down his neck. I mean, it shows you the type of pressure that's on these kids, but it also shows you what these programs need to do to contend with Alabama and to contend with these guys. And Dwayne Haskins looks the part at Ohio State. You mentioned it. JT Barrett was an outstanding college quarterback, a good college guy. I shouldn't say outstanding, yep. A good college quarterback. You know, one of the better ones in Ohio State history. But now you see what this offense is capable of with a quarterback who's a difference maker. And it's scary for every defensive coordinator they're going to have to face the rest of the year.
Look, I'm a Big 12 guy, but I'm going to challenge you on the depth of the SEC. And you're right about the East. You know, anytime Kentucky's winning games,
right?
But, you know, you start to question the validity of it. But dude, I mean, the West is so deep. If LSU has marginal quarterback play, which is what they've had, you know, they got so many athletes. I don't love Auburn, but if Auburn is like your fifth best team and they can beat Washington in a semi-neutral side game, I mean,
I don't think Auburn is their fifth best. I think Auburn is their second or third best. Even though they just lost to LSU, I think I would put them at their third best. I mean, it still remains to be seen. Here's the thing that bothers me, and you know this. I mean, Joel Klatt, your colleague at FS1, has spoken out a lot about this. I hate the fallacy that's the AP top 25, and it doesn't matter. It's not supposed to, but it absolutely affects the perception of the conference. Sure. And I put out Monday or Tuesday, I'll put out a tweet and say, this is how stupid the rankings are. For instance, you got Mississippi State is ranked 14th. And Mississippi State's a pretty good football team. But if you went by resumes, there's no way they deserve to be ranked ahead of Duke, who's in the ACC. But because if you look at Mississippi State's wins, they've got a win over...
They beat Kansas State on the road, didn't they?
That was their win. That was their one win.
Okay.
Duke has two wins, one over Northwestern on the road, one over Baylor on the road. Both of those significant wins, not close
games.
Dude,
Baylor, come on, dude. Come on. Baylor stinks. They're total
rebuild. But how do we know Kansas State's any good? Northwestern is a good football team. That's what my thing is. Northwestern was a better win than Kansas State was, both of those on the road. But if Duke had an SEC logo on their helmet, they would be top 20, top 15. But because they don't, because everybody views them as a basketball school and they're having to overcome this perception, then you don't. When you just scroll down the standings and say, look at all these SEC teams that are in the top 25. That's what's frustrating, I think, to guys like Joel Klatt and myself. And then it makes your wins look better and your losses look less. And so they don't get penalized as much when they lose, and they get rewarded way more when they win. That's the thing that's frustrating for me about it, is that there is a perception about the SEC. Some of it is worth it, and they deserve it. Some of it is not, though. But they get it all. That's what bothers me.
Danny Cannell, stand-up dude, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Check it out, his work on CBS Sports or CBS Sports HQ, every day off the bench with Rajah Bell. DK, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, my man. Have a good one.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Take a listen to DeSean Jackson, star wide receiver, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yesterday on the NFL Network.
He's playing on fire right now, and you know, the way the team is rallying behind him and just playing lights out football, you have to kind of honor it. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can't take the hot man out. He got the hot fire right now. It's like NBA Jam. We used to play NBA Jam. We was younger. Whoever got that hot fire shot, you got to keep shooting, man.
Mm-hmm. NBA Jam. I like NBA Jam references. Still my favorite video game. We still play at my house. He's on fire. But let's study history, shall we? The first time Ryan Fitzpatrick was a full-time starter. Remember, he started in Cincinnati as he held the ship together for Carson Palmer. He started in Houston as well. First time he's a full-time starter was in Buffalo. He was the offensive player of the month in the month of September. 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and guess how the Bills started? 3-0. Shortly thereafter, he signed a six-year, $59 million extension, $10 million in signing bonus. He signed that in October. After signing the extension, he finished the season. They finished the season 6-10, 3-10 after going 3-0 in September. It's not all on Ryan Fitzpatrick, but that was the first Fitz magic we saw. In 2012, he once again returned to Buffalo because he had that huge signing, because he had the big number. 8 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. First 3 games in the year, Bills got off to a 2-1 hot start. 6 touchdowns, 13 interceptions after the first 3 games. They finished the season 6-10, 4-9 after starting 2-1. Oh, but we're not done. Do you remember when he got the start instead of Geno Smith? Right? Like, look, now he's the starter because Jameis Winston, a couple of years ago, says he was drunk. An Uber driver said he groped her. And the NFL was like, enough is enough. And he took a 3-game suspension. Geno Smith got knocked out, right, by his teammate because he no-showed at his charity football camp. So he not only leads the league in amazing starts in different locations, but also being the luckiest backup at the right time ever. 2015, that was his best season as a pro. They started 2-0. He threw 4 touchdowns in those first 2 games. Week 3, started to come back to reality. 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and a Week 3 loss at home to the Eagles. He also had three interceptions in a Week 17 loss in Buffalo to the Bills. Had they won that game, they would have made the playoffs. Season on the line in Buffalo against the non-playoff Buffalo Bill team. And that team finished 10-6. He held out, missed part of camp, signed a 1-year, fully guaranteed $12 million deal. The next year, Week 2, Offensive Player of the Week, much like this year. Week 3, 6 interceptions and a 24-3 loss to the Chiefs. By Week 6, he was benched for Geno Smith. He came back in the game. He came back in after Geno got injured, and he was benched again Week 13 for Bryce Petty. His second year with the New York Jets, when he got $12 million 1 year after holding out because he wanted $16 or $18 million guaranteed per year for 2 years. 12 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. They were 5-11, 4-10 with Fitz as their quarterback. My point is this. There's a bunch of different guys you could say he is, but Nick Foles is the easiest one. Right? The whole, hey, Nick Foles is on fire. Nick Foles was on fire. If the Philadelphia Eagles played a game the week after the Super Bowl and Carson Wentz was healthy, who would be the starter? Now, you might say to yourself, well, Carson Wentz was a MVP and Jameis Winston was a disappointment. Jameis Winston actually is coming off his best season as a pro. He hasn't been as good as we thought he could be, but neither has his team been as good as we thought it could be. Some of that is him, a lot of it last year with his defense. And the fact is, he's your franchise quarterback. That's why even with all the nonsense, they still picked up the option on his contract. He's making $20 million. They know he's better. Everyone knows he's better. But we're getting caught up in the Fitzmagic thing, which is what we've done before. Done this before.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
He's got an outstanding podcast called Move the Sticks. He's also the color voice of the LA Chargers, who got a hard-fought win over the worst team in the NFL in Buffalo. He's the one and only Daniel Jeremiah, kind enough to spend some time with us every Tuesday here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Let's get to last night first. Let's work our way backwards. Watching the Seahawks, I feel like there was a lack of creativity knowing that they were going against that type of pass rush and that type of energy coming from the Bears defensively. Am I wrong to think, you know, they're just the lack of creativity and letting Russell Wilson go back there and figure things out is ultimately what doomed them?
Yeah, to me, it's creativity in the running game. You know, you've got to do a better job of committing to the run and being creative with how you run the football and take some of that pressure off. We know it's been well documented what the Seattle offensive line looks like when they have to sit back there and pass protect down after down. And they just couldn't really get that going. So, to me, that's where the focus should be, is them. You know, so much talk about Russell and protecting him. They need to figure out a way where they can run the football. They've put a lot of resources at the running back position lately, and they need to figure out a way to cash that in.
I also said that, you know, like, look, when Russell Wilson's contract is up, they're going to have to put better pieces around him and invest in the offensive line, but he's also going to have to make the admission, hey, I might have to take a little bit less or have to be creative with my contract in order for us to have the money to spread around, right? Like, you can draw a direct line between when guys like Russell got paid, and he earned the right to get paid, and when this team began to fracture and fall apart, can't you?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, so much was said about the formula, winning with a quarterback on a rookie deal, and they were able to pay some other guys while Russell wasn't making that big money. Now that he is making that big money, and now you've seen some of those guys move on, and it's cost them the opportunity to re-sign some other players. So that, to me, seems to be like the big talking point. But the emphasis should be on them drafting better. That's how you how do you function when you've got a quarterback carrying a big number? You need to be hitting year in and year out on some of these third, fourth, fifth round picks. Now, early returns on last year's group, I wasn't crazy about where they took Penny as high as they did, but some of the picks after that looked like they could have some success. But you have to hit on your young players because those are the cheap starters. Those guys you draft, there is a lot of pressure on you when you've got a quarterback carrying that huge number. You're not going to be able to be ultra aggressive in free agency. So to me, it comes down to Doug. They've got to put some more resources into what they're doing scouting-wise, and they've got to find a way to get back to where they were drafting good players.
Well, that's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I think you can do pretty well with the way the Bears are trying to be creative offensively and hide Trubisky, but at some point he's got to get better. What are your returns on Trubisky now, two games in with Nagy's offense?
I got a funny text from somebody in the league that said the Bears have done a wonderful job, you know, scripting the first 20 plays. Maybe they ought to script the first 60 plays. That's a pretty good line.
It's true. When the script runs out, he looks like a completely different player.
No question. So you know, they've got to figure out a way. I was around Nagy. He's a great dude, and he's just, you know, still it's new for him. You know, if you got a young quarterback, you've got a young play caller. They've got to figure out how to make their adjustments as they go throughout the game. I thought, when you watched it first week of the season with the Bears, when they sent pressure off of his right side, he was a little bit paralyzed because that's kind of his little safety net, is to be able to bail out to the right, and they took that away. And I think, you know, you're going to see teams start take things away where he's comfortable, and he's got to get better. He's got to improve, and they've got to figure out a way to help him with that. I think he's got a chance to be a top, you know, 12 to 15, maybe. That would be the absolute ceiling for him. But if they could get him in that range with some of the other pieces they have in place, the way they've built defensively, they got a chance to be a pretty good team.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, former NFL scout, joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Ryan Fitzpatrick is setting the world on fire. I kind of went through, hey, 2011, we saw this Bills start 3-0. They finished the season 3-10. You know, you go to 2012, the next year, they start 2-1 after he got that big contract. And they go 6-10 at the end of the season, finishing 4-9. You even go with the Jets. Remember, he had a chance to win in Buffalo, send them to the playoffs. That magical year he had in New York, hot start, 2-0. They lose on the road. He throws three picks. The following year with the Jets, week two, player of the week in the AFC, and then six interceptions the next week. I get that in the emotion of the moment and the fact that Jameis Winston hasn't been as good as he has been billed to be, you'll want to start Ryan Fitzpatrick. But how much more history do we have to know this guy's a great spot starter, a tremendous backup who can play, but there's a reason that you invested so much in Jameis and he should get his good job back game four?
So I thought it was funny. There was this thing floating around on Twitter with the Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of cycle. And it said it just repeated itself throughout his career. Get signed as a backup, starter gets hurt, play well for a short period of time, get paid, then stink, then get cut, then get signed as a backup, and it just keeps circling around and around. That's his entire career, cutting ways down. But he's definitely in the middle of a hot streak right now. You know what? I think that they were so disappointed with Jameis off the field with what took place that, you know, I think that would be factored in a little bit. It wouldn't just be they're expecting Ryan Fitzpatrick to play at this unrealistic level once Jameis comes back. But I think it's almost, hey, if we're winning some ball games, I don't anticipate Jameis will be thrown back in there. Whether or not that's the right move or not, that's just my take on it.
No. But I'm not asking you what they'll do. I'm asking you what they should do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick's their long-term answer at quarterback. I think Jameis Winston I haven't given up. I think there's still a chance he can be that long-term quarterback. So, to me, I don't know, you know, when I say he doesn't get the job back right away, I think we'll see Jameis Winston starting games this season. And I think that would, whether that's week 5, week 6, week 7, I think eventually this, you know, you mentioned it, there's no way he's going to continue to play at this level. He hasn't shown that he can do that previously. And right now they've just hit on some huge plays, and I give a lot of credit to the skill guys they have on the outside that are playing out of their minds right now.
You mentioned Tyreek Hill being essentially unguardable when he was in Carson 2 weeks ago and they lit up the Chargers. They go and light up the Pittsburgh Steelers. They went empty a lot. I think they went empty 21, 22 times. People have done that against Pittsburgh in the past. Patriots do it. Heck, you go back, John Gruden and the Raiders, I think one of the first ones to do it, to really kind of expose some of their weaknesses in coverage. How sustainable is Mahomes in this Kansas City Chiefs offense?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the empty thing, because when I went back and watched it, I charted it. Of the 28 throws, 14 of the throws came out empty. So 10% of the time it's pretty simple, Doug. You get out there, you put 5 dudes out there. This is like a basketball game. There's a matchup that favors you somewhere. And they have several that favor them because they have one-on-one winners out there. And he's done a nice job of finding them. The crazy thing is I went back and studied, you know, the whole game, but the 5 incompletions, 3 of them would have been touchdowns if he puts the ball on the money. I mean, they've got guys running scot-free all over the field. There's one play that Sammy Watkins freaking 50 yards down the field with T.J. Watt covering him with no help over the top. Like, there was no – I mean, it was they ended up missing that one. But they've got so many favorable matchups. The challenge with this team is going to be as we get later in the season, the game gets a little bit more physical. They're going to have to get their run game cranked up. I just hope they don't wait too long to get Kareem Hunt rolling and cranked up, because they're having so much fun in the air right now. But they got to find a way to get the run game going, and their defense is a major concern.
You mentioned T.J. Watt out in coverage against Sammy Watkins. Am I wrong? Pittsburgh feels like a mess.
There were so many communication issues, and I haven't read the clips to see what was said after the game or what was said yesterday or today. But when you watch the tape, when you watch the coaching tape, and at the end of almost every play, there's one Steeler player with his hands up looking at somebody else. Like, where are you? What are you doing? I mean, there's some major communication gaps in that game.
Mm. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's go to the New England Patriots. You mentioned favorable matchups. They essentially have one right now. And Rob Gronkowski and the Jags show that, hey, you can put him in vice coverage, double team him, and you can make Tom Brady look elsewhere. So I guess, does that make Josh Gordon a smart signing, considering it's only a 7th-round pick? If it doesn't work, if it does work, if it's a 5th-round pick?
Well, I mean, I have to go to the Josh Gordon thing this way. Does it cost him a lot? No. Am I optimistic that it's going to work? No. I just don't think it's a great fit. When you look at how, you know, guys fit into that system, everybody likes to always go back and point to Randy Moss. Randy Moss, and if you've spent any time with him and talked football with Randy Moss is one of the most football intelligent players you'll ever be around. And this system requires so much reading coverage on the go and so much sight adjust. And that when you got number 12, you find yourself not on the same page with him for a couple times, he will never trust you. It just won't happen. So I think it's a pretty steep learning curve in the middle of the season. Just get thrown in there and try and figure this thing out on the fly. Maybe they proved me wrong, but that's a tall ask.
You saw the Chargers once again calling their games in person. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Felt like they kind of got stale, got a big lead, and then felt like they got asleep at the wheel. I know the defense came up with some big stops and big plays, but 2 games into the season, getting ready to take on the Rams, who are arguably the most talented team, playing at a peak level to start the season. What's your take on the Chargers?
Well, they haven't completely, put together a complete game, I would say. You know, you've seen some of the flashes. I think the Chargers team had a chance to be really, really good. I wouldn't adjust expectations at all what they were before the season. A lot of people picked them as a Super Bowl caliber team. We've seen it in spurts. We saw it with the offense in the second half against Kansas City. We saw it with the offense again the first half against Buffalo. And I thought defensively, after Kansas City went off in that third quarter, they kind of settled down. And they were against Josh Allen, his first start, to be expected. But they heated him up. I think they had six sacks. They're making plays at all three levels of their defense. And these young kids, Doug, Kaiser White is going to be a stud. Rookie linebacker is already starting. Derwin James looks like he might be a Pro Bowler as a rookie, the way he's playing. They're getting Chinna Nwosu a little bit more involved. He has a sack. So the defense is finding ways to try and get by until Joey Bosa comes back. I don't know how long that's going to be, but this is a tough matchup with the Rams this week. But I just look at this Chargers team and say if they kind of stay in it, find themselves in the middle of the season, you know, at or a little bit above 500, and whenever Joey Bosa comes back and they start gelling defensively, I think they're one of the most talented teams in the league.
Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys get their first win, but it's very, very ho-hum. Like, is this what we should expect? Is this the way in which they're going to have to win football games?
Yeah, it's just the whole division's not very good, you know. I mean, you got the Eagles who are waiting on a bunch of injured guys to come back and kind of sleepwalking right now. But I watched that Cowboys-Giants game, and I don't know about you, but I don't feel like I'm watching any playoff football when I'm watching both those teams out there. It looks so average. The Redskins are going to be up and down. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked at the end of the season the Eagles are the only team in that division over 500.
Yeah, I think the Eagles, no QB1. Without Alshon Jeffrey, some other injuries. They didn't have Sproles last week. That's the one team that I could give a pass to because the defensive pass rush was so good against the Atlanta Falcons. I do think that'll carry them. And assuming Wentz is anywhere near where he was, I think that's the one. I mean, that's a huge change from where they are. But I would agree with you with everybody else. And hey, Alex Smith does not look comfortable at all in D.C. Like, for a guy who you thought, hey, you can chalk them up, he's going to have 30 touchdowns and, seven or eight interceptions, and maybe they can't win in the playoffs. He looks incredibly uncomfortable in that offense.
How, by the way, after seeing how hard, a little bit more difficult than people imagine in Washington with what they have to play with there, seeing what Kirk Cousins did previously there and seeing how Kirk Cousins has played through a couple weeks there in Minnesota, everybody talked about he's the most overpaid player in NFL history. How could they pay him that? I tend to think the guy was a little underappreciated for what he did in Washington with what he had.
Yeah, that someday there's going to be a 30 for 30 on why that relationship never seemed to make. My guess is, it's one of those guys, and we've all seen a different place of work. You come in the mailroom, right? You come in, in the mailroom, and people always want you to feel like you're appreciative of, hey, listen, you got the big job, you got the big corner. It's almost, what it's like? It's like, what's the Goodfellas? Remember Goodfellas?
Yeah,
hey,
yeah, yeah.
Why don't you get your shine box? Huh? Why don't you go get your shine box?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go right out of college, Doug. I worked with ESPN right out of college as a production assistant. So every time I see all, and I've become friends with a lot of guys over there and executives over there, and I see them along the way, I always leave there going, I think they're just like, that's their little production assistant. Isn't that cute? Another job now. That's great.
It's interesting, though, because, Bodenheimer, he started as like an intern, right? Mark Shapiro used to run the place, and he was getting dudes, he started out as a PA. He was a producer for the Jim Rome show, right? So, I mean, like, guys start somewhere, but they want you to feel obviously Shapiro left because he didn't get paid like he thought he should get paid. But anyway, the point is,
I just took you down a total different turn.
No, you didn't. But again, you're correct in that. Yeah. They like, hey, remember you were in the mailroom? Like, yeah, but I'm not now. Now I've shown you what I can do when I'm on TV. Like, yeah, but you still started in the mailroom. You should be. They used to do that all the time with your percentage of increase. Like, yeah, man, listen, I know you're not being paid what everybody else doing the exact same job you're doing is being paid, but look at how much more it is than when you started. Like, what? That's exactly what, good point. DJ, thanks so much, dude.
Thanks, bud. See you, man.
Daniel Jeremiah from Move the Sticks is the podcast on the NFL Network, also the LA Chargers Radio Network.